Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the 10-4 Show. My name is Jonathan Carter, and this week in episode 15, we're going to go ahead and take a look at the new features coming in the Entity Framework 4.0. Now, this release is quite a beast in that from both a tooling and a runtime perspective, it contains a ton. So there's no way I can cover it all in one episode. But in this week, what we're going to do is go ahead and take a look at a new tooling enhancement that allows you to take advantage of what we're calling model-first development. Now, when you think about the Entity Framework V1, if you were leveraging the Entity Data Model, you really kind of only had one option, and that was to reverse engineer your Entity Data Model from an existing database. And for a lot of people, that works just fine. If you already have an existing database, or you prefer to start your development with a database, then that's great. But there's definitely a ton of people that want to start with the model first. They don't maybe even want to think about the database. They want to just allow something to generate it for them. So with the Entity Framework V4 and model first development, you can effectively just create your entity data model, create your entities and associations, and then allow the tooling to generate the SQL needed to create the database from that. So what this does is it makes it where if that's the type of development you prefer, and you don't want to have to think about the database, well, then you don't have to. Now you can just leverage the Entity Data Model and the Entity Framework to do your data access. So let's go ahead and take a look at a demo and see how this works.
All right, so what we're going to do is we're just going to take a very simple application. In this case, it's a web app, which is completely inconsequential. But what we're going to do is we're going to add a new Entity Data Model, and instead of reverse engineering a database, we're going to build it from scratch and then generate a database from it. So we do the traditional add new item, and we'll select the ADO.NET entity data model. We'll go ahead and just call this customers. Alright, so let's give it a second to generate all of its goodness. And normally, if you were using 3.5 SP1 and the entity framework, you would choose this first option, generate from database, because that was really the only one that actually worked, where you would point the wizard at an existing database and it would reverse engineer it and give you an EDM and everything would work. But what we're going to do is we're going to go ahead and take a look at the empty model story. Now that was actually there in 1.0 of the Entity Framework, but it wouldn't really give you much in terms of functionality. But with Visual Studio 2010 and the Entity Framework V4, this now is fully functional. So let's go ahead and click that and we'll hit finish. So as that is generating our EDMX file, eventually we'll get the nice design surface that will allow us to create entities, associations, and so forth and so on. So what this does is it gives us the benefit of if we didn't have a database in place, and as a developer, our style isn't really to think about our application in terms of a database in the beginning, well, we can just go ahead and think about it in terms of the way we want to model our entities and the associations and such, and then let the tooling determine how that should actually look in terms of a relational database. Okay, so let's go ahead and first things first, we'll add a new entity. We'll go ahead and call this customer, and I'll set the entity set to customers. So we'll say okay, generate that. Let me real quick turn on the grid, just because I feel really good about the grid. I don't know why, I cannot stand it not being there. So let's also do a couple other things. So what we're going to do is really we'll keep these entities pretty simple. But one other feature that isn't necessarily tied to the model first scenario is the tooling now supports the creation of complex types, right? And complex types are just essentially containers for property values that themselves aren't entities, but are really just a collection of fields that are in line in a table row. So they're not a separate table in the actual database, but it just is a way for you to kind of categorize a set of columns or properties. So in this case, we're going to create one called address. And all this is going to do is just aggregate up all the different address fields. So as you'll notice, when we created that complex type, it showed up in the model browser. Complex types do not show up in the surface. The main design surface, that is primarily for entities and associations. So over here in the model browser, we can click on address and we can add a few scalar properties. So we'll create one, call this line 1, and we'll also do a line 2. And we'll just kind of complete out the standard address city. Right, this probably could be improved on. We're just leaving these properties as strings, just for example. So we'll do city state, and then finally we'll do zip. Okay. So now that we have this complex type address, what we can do is go back to our customer and then say add a complex property, and we'll call it address, and it automatically sets a type to address. So now what this does is it makes it where we, instead of having individual properties directly on the customer for city, state, zip, line 1, we have address, which then in turn has those properties. So it's just kind of a nice way to kind of group those together. So let's actually add one more complex type, and we'll call this one name. And what we'll do is we'll just use a complex type to aggregate the individual pieces of a customer's name. So we'll say first, and then we'll do middle, and then finally last. So some of you might be looking at this and kind of cringing and thinking, oh, I would never do that. And that's fine. Really, there's no set rule or reason why you should or shouldn't use complex types. It's just kind of a matter of preference. I personally like this style, right? And the good thing is that this is the conceptual model. So it doesn't matter how the application surfaces. So let me go ahead and select name here. It doesn't matter how our application surfaces our entities, right? So if you want to tweak this in the underlying database, you can. So we don't have to think of this as being separate tables or really even be concerned with how is this being stored in the database. Really, we are only focused on, at this point, how do we want our application to work with these entities. Okay, so let's go ahead and also create a very basic hierarchy. And what we'll do is let's create a important customer entity, and it will inherit from customer. And kind of what we'll do is we'll say that, you know, for the customers that are really important to us in our system, we want to track a few extra pieces of information. So we want to know what their birthday is, because they're important. We want to be able to possibly send them some type of an email, and we'll set the type of that to datetime. And then we'll also say we care about their email address so that we can contact them. Okay. So this is a pretty basic hierarchy, but it'll be important to see kind of how is this reflected when the database is generated. So let's go ahead and create a few other entities, see if we can set up some associations. So we'll create an order and call it order entity set orders. And then on order, we'll go ahead and just create a few properties. We'll say subtotal, and we'll set the type of that to decimal. And let's go ahead and create tax and do the same thing, set that to decimal. And then finally we'll do total. Alright. And we'll keep this pretty basic, but for illustration purposes I do want to create a couple of different scenarios in terms of a moderately complex entity data model. That way we can illustrate just how well the model first tooling can generate the database from it. Okay, so let's go ahead and add an association between our customer and our order. So the primary entity is the customer, the other end is the order. Go ahead and determine that the multiplicity is correct, so we have one customer can have many orders, that's good. And because it's plural, we want the orders to be orders, because it's plural. Alright, so we'll say okay, and here's our association set up. So let's finally go ahead and just add one more. We'll just say order detail. Create that. And we'll just add a price and a quantity property to this. So we'll say price, and we'll make that a decimal. Oh, not datetime offset, decimal. And then we'll go ahead and do quantity. And we'll make that a int 32. Okay, now finally let's go ahead and also create an association between order and order detail. So order is the primary, order detail is the other end. one to many, if that makes sense, and then we'll just set this to order details. Okay, so here we go. Very basic customer entity data model. We have a very simple inheritance hierarchy. We have two instances of complex types, and then we have a few associations. So now, imagine that we're done and we're happy with this, and we want to now project this entity data model into a relational database so we can actually start working with it. So what we do is now if we right-click on the design surface, there's a new option in Visual Studio 2010 that says Create Database from Model. So if we click that, we'll be prompted with the traditional Create Database wizard. So we need a new connection. We'll say that. And in this case, we're working with SQL Express. So I'll just set that as the server name. And we'll say customers for the database. Now that database does not exist, right? So it's going to prompt us and say, would you like to create it? And we're going to say yes, because that is the whole point of this exercise. So it's going to go off and create that database. And now what it's going to do is it's going to show us, here's what the connection string is going to be. Do you want to store that in the web config? Of course we do in this case, so we'll say next. And then it's going to generate the DDL that is used to create the actual database that reflects this entity data model. So give this a second to do that. And here we go. So what I want to do is actually go through this SQL that was generated and compare it to our entity data model to see how well it actually reflected what it is we want to represent. So the first thing you see is here's a section to create the tables. And here we go, here's the customer table. Now notice that it's of interest that here's the ID property that we had, and then also notice these five address properties. So those are what actually represent the underlying storage for our address complex type. So notice in the database it's address underscore line one, etc. Right? We don't necessarily care about that, because we're not really concerned with the underlying database. That's just the convention that the entity framework tooling used to generate those columns. Then in the same instance, you notice that the name complex property, it was generated with name underscore first, middle, and last. So those columns are in fact part of the customer table, but they're not in line to the customer entity because we chose to aggregate them into complex types. Okay, so then we go down and we see order, and it's interesting to notice that order now has a customer ID column that we never actually specified. And the reason that was generated is because of the association that we defined between order and customer. So the entity framework determined that we need the customer ID property in order to have that association in place. Now you can see the same thing with order detail. Notice that it also has an order ID. Now finally, we'll notice that here's a table that it's creating called customers underscore important customer. Now, the reason it's doing that customers underscore prefix is because of the fact that important customer is an inheritance line of the customer entity. Now you'll notice also that there is an ID column that is being generated that was not part of the important customer entity. Now what this ID column is actually representing the ID of the customer that this represents. So what this is called, this scenario is called table per type. And what that means is that every type in the inheritance tree will ultimately be represented by its own table. So in this case, customer has a table, and then there's an entirely separate table for important customer. So out of the box, the model first tooling fully supports table per type hierarchies. There are other possible schemes that you can do, such as table per hierarchy or table per concrete type, but the tooling does not natively support those. There will be, though, some out-of-band releases that will fully support those. And the good thing to note, we won't show in this episode, is that the logic that is used to generate this DDL is actually done using T4 templates. So it's fully customizable, which we might dig into in a future episode. Okay, so then if we go down even further, we notice that it creates the primary keys, and then also the foreign keys that represent the associations. Okay, great. So what we're going to do is we're going to just go ahead and copy all this SQL. Oh, I failed that, so page down a few times. And copy it. And then we'll say finish. So what it's going to do is, because of the, there's two things that are actually created at this point. Other than the DDL, right, when we define our entities, we only actually defined one portion of the EDMX, and that is the EDM, in that the entity data model itself only represents our conceptual model. But in order to actually map that to a database, we have to then define the storage definition and then the mapping between the storage and the conceptual. So in this case, now it's asking us, do we want to overwrite the current storage and mapping? And of course, we want to say yes. So it'll go off and do that, and at this point, our EDMX file is complete and ready to be used. Right now with the current bits, the database was created, but the DDL that was generated wasn't actually run. So in order for us to create those the tables and the foreign keys and so forth, we have to actually run the DDL manually. So if we go into Management Studio, we notice there's no databases. If we refresh that, here's our customer database. So it did create that, but none of the tables are here. So because I copy the DDL that was generated, let me go into Management Studio. I'll do a quick paste. We'll execute it. That should run successfully as it did. So if I go back here, do a refresh, take a look at tables, and here we go. So we have customer, and let's take a look at the columns. Right here is what we would expect, the address information, name, important customers, order details, and so forth and so on. So you can imagine that when the Visual Studio 2010 bits complete, or RTM, that the wizard would actually give you an option to have it execute the DDL automatically. So that way we wouldn't have to have copied it out and done the manual execution in SQL Server Management Studio or some other scheme. So essentially though, what we have done is now we were able to think about our application from a conceptual standpoint in terms of the interaction between customers, how we think of important customers, orders, and details, and not have to worry about the underlying storage mechanism. And then the entity framework tooling with the model first scenario made it to where we could take that thought process and then project it into a database.
So while the new model first development feature does have a lot of value on its own, it doesn't even come close to representing the full gamut of functionality being introduced in the Entity Framework V4. In future episodes, we'll go ahead and expose some of the new runtime as well as tooling enhancements made to the Entity Framework and continue showing how hopefully the use of it for data access as well as modeling becomes much more intuitive. So with that, I thank you once again for tuning in. We encourage you to continue watching all future episodes of 10.4 as we keep the exposure of new features and functionality for Visual Studio 2010 and the .NET Framework 4.0. As always, please keep the feedback coming. We've got a lot of emails with really good comments and such, and we really do appreciate hearing from you. So with that, over and out. We'll be right back.